Archer City, Texas is a town with two identities. To outsiders, it's the hometown of a Pulitzer Prize-winning author and his world-famous bookstore. To residents, it's home, a small town in the area where North and West Texas meet that's not unlike other towns of its size. These are not separate identities. They are linked in ways both residents and outsiders don't always understand. Each identity affects the other through actions small and large. What you are about to hear is the story of one of those actions and its effects. I'm Clinton Whedon, and this is the KCCU Report, Clearing the Books. It's July in Texas, and the usual hot, dry weather has come once again. Parts of the state are in varying degrees of drought warning, though the situation is not as dire as it was a year ago, when Texans endured the worst single-year drought in state history. But even with better conditions, drought warnings bring water usage restrictions, so setting up a sprinkler or filling a bag of water balloons isn't really an option. Aside from swimming at lakes or in pools, Texans have to find ways other than water to keep cool. One of those ways is by finding what's become colloquially known as a Texas stop sign, the red and white sign of a Dairy Queen restaurant, and ordering an ice cream treat. The chain is found in communities of all sizes across the state, but is particularly a staple of small towns. Towns like Archer City. Archer, as the locals call it, is a small oil patch town about 20 miles south of Wichita Falls. There's some ranching in the area as well, as Archer County bills itself as the short grass ranching capital, but oil is what pays the bills around here. It's a humble little place, even about its grand accomplishments. For example, the only place you'll see public recognition of the 1964 Texas Class A State Football Championship is at the football field. I'm in town because I have business in Archer City, but it's the early afternoon of a hot July day, and I need both lunch and a way to keep cool. So off to the Dairy Queen I go. The Dairy Queen is the only chain restaurant in Archer City since the Sonic Drive-In closed. Actually, it's one of the only chain anything in Archer City. It takes me longer than I'd like to get there, since I'm coming from the north and the restaurant is at the south edge of town, but that's a minor complaint. There's not much traffic, except at the intersection of Highway 79 and Highway 25. It doesn't take very long to get anywhere here. As I pull into the parking lot, it's apparent that the Dairy Queen has been here for a long while. The building's been remodeled, but the outdoor dining tables with their faded, differently colored seats are a dead giveaway. But for me, that's okay. The tables are bits of character, something I don't often find in chain establishments. There are more bits of character inside, wall paintings that detail some of the local history, as well as a large wooden sign proclaiming this to be Wildcat Country. I order my lunch and sit down at one of the booths. Mine happens to be yellow, others are orange or green. I suspect the booths have been around almost as long as the outdoor tables. There are only one or two other patrons in the restaurant, and as the rest of town was when I drove through, it's quiet. It's just another day in Archer City. As I dig into my basket of chicken fingers, I notice that there are a few other touches of local flair around me. They're the only things besides a photograph and a few product posters hanging on the walls. One is a framed collection of newspaper clippings from when the Archer City Dairy Queen found itself in a major motion picture. The others are framed book jackets and a short biography of the man who I'm told often stops in for a lime-flavored Dr. Pepper, Larry McMurtry. The Pulitzer Prize-winning author is Archer City's most famous native, and through his fictionalization of it, he's made his hometown of around 1,800 people somewhat famous as well. One of the book jackets on the wall is Texasville, which is the one that put the Dairy Queen in the movies. Another is McMurtry's memoir, Walter Benjamin at the Dairy Queen, the cover of which features the fine establishment where I'm dining. I get the feeling that most non-residents only end up in Archer City because they have a reason to be there. I also get the feeling many of those reasons have to do with Larry McMurtry, the author. But I'm not here because of the author. I'm here because of Larry McMurtry, the bookseller, and to ask him why he's about to make most of his store disappear. McMurtry has been a book dealer roughly as long as he's been a writer, and it's an occupation about which he has written many times. For the last 25 years, he's operated a store in Archer City that for most of its existence has been called Booked Up, same as the store he operated in Washington, D.C. But it's not just any bookstore. Booked Up is one of the largest dealers in what it describes as fine, rare, and scholarly books in the country. Its stock is estimated to be around 500,000 volumes, and it takes up 4 buildings in the Archer City Square. But in August, McMurtry will auction off the contents of 3 of those buildings and reduce the stock to a more manageable 150,000 or so. It's an event he's calling the last book sale, a hat tip to the book and film that put Archer City on the pop culture map, The Last Picture Show. Today, I'm here to talk to him about why he's doing it and what it might mean for his hometown. Booked Up's building number 1 is a converted auto shop just off the square. It's the building that will remain largely untouched by the auction. It's also the one that every Booked Up customer has to come through regardless of what they're looking for, because it's the one with the cash register. The front room, or showcase room as it's officially called, is full of rare and antique books and Western decor. It's where the few copies Booked Up sells of McMurtry's own works, a very recent reintroduction to the store, can be purchased, and mementos of his career, particularly from the books that have been adapted into films, are found throughout. The books surround posters, photos of movie shoots, and the occasional award. There's a playpen near the store's office for manager Crystal Collins' daughter Lexi, who's been given the nickname the Bookstore Baby. A kitten named Owen pokes his head out from behind a stack of books every now and then. He's a rescue cat that's still not used to people, but that will assuredly change if he lives here for a while. The phone rings and a new customer gets directions on how to reach Archer City. Even at one of the country's biggest bookstores, the small-town feel remains. I'm a few minutes early for my interview, so I sit down at a table and make small talk with Collins and Jan Graves, who also works at the store. After a few minutes, McMurtry ambles in. I ask the obvious questions first. Why is he doing this, especially now with so many bookstores in decline?
Well, we haven't had a decline. It's not, we're not doing this because of decline. We're doing it because I'm old, I'm 76, because 500,000 books would be a huge burden for my son and grandson, who are literate, but they aren't bookish. They don't know anything about the book world. They would have a very hard time dealing with 500,000. Yeah, 500,000 books. They would have a very hard time. So I did it partly for them, partly because it's just time. We're going to keep this building, which is a very good building, with well over 100,000 books in it. And that's enough for us to deal with at this stage of my life. And Crystal runs it very, very well. And we're not going out of business in any way. We're just downsizing.
The downsizing will result in over 300,000 books becoming available for other dealers and individual collectors. But why would they come all the way to Archer City? Aren't most of these books available elsewhere?
Our distinction, we have distinction, is not that we have so many good books, it's that we have so few bad books. Essentially everything we put on the shelf is good, and it's all been selected by me. I've bought over the years about 250 personal libraries and about 26 bookstores, the stock of 26 bookstores. People going out of business know that we buy books. I happen to come into the book business just at a time when the last of the libraries that were formed, say in the 19th century by educated people, were put on the market, and we bought a lot of them.
As with most bookstores, Booked Up stock is organized by genre. But unlike other stores, those genres are spread amongst the 4 buildings. McMurtry says that's the way things will stay for the auction.
No, we haven't rearranged much. We need for the lots, there are nearly 1,600 lots. We need them for them to all be attractive to some extent. We're not trying to keep every good book in this building. We can't logistically. We have 15,000 mysteries. I just assume not have 15,000 mysteries, but I don't have any way to get them out of here and get them somewhere else where they could be marketed intelligently. So we're going to live with our 15,000 mysteries. And we can't. That's pretty well the way it is throughout the store. There's no one section. But they say, well, we can downsize this and I'll put it over in Building 3 and let the auction carry it off. Can't really do that. Building 2, 3, and 4 have a wonderful bunch of books. And we're going to see what the world thinks about it.
We chat a bit more about the auction itself, and then come to the subject of Booked Up's relationship with Archer City, which hasn't always been a smooth one. but McMurtry thinks there's an understanding between his store and his hometown.
The town is not bookish, of course, and we don't have any real customers from the town, but I do think the town recognizes that we bring people here, and they eat lunch, or they buy gas, or they buy an antique, or something like that. I think the town recognizes that we're a fairly vital part of its economy.
And what does he think will happen to Archer City after the downsizing?
My guess is it might become an antique town. There are 3 antique stores now, and they're pretty good. And I wouldn't be surprised if when we empty the buildings, if 1 or 2 of them became an antique store.
As for Booked Up itself, McMurtry doesn't foresee much change, despite the reduction in stock.
I don't really know. We locked it down on Monday, so we've only had 3 days. But this building has been full of people. A lot of people have been coming in, milling around. We're selling really well just out of this store, and I don't see any reason why that wouldn't continue.
News of the auction has spread throughout the bookselling world to all kinds of stores, including those in the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, of which Booked Up is a member. One of those stores is John Wendell Antiquarian Bookseller in San Francisco, where John Wendell has been selling books for almost 30 years. He says this kind of event isn't anything new for book dealers.
I think it is something that has happened in our business again and again. And people forget that history does repeat itself, and that back in the 19th century, when, for example, the Sir Thomas Phillips collection was dispersed, they started the auctions in the mid-19th century, and they were going on into the 1970s. So, you know, huge collections of books have been dispersed via auction many times in the last 200 years or so. Most recently, the inventory of Serendipity Books in California, in Berkeley, after the demise of the owner, there were several auctions. Over 400,000 items were sold.
And in contrast to the questions such an event raises about the future of Booked Up and Archer City itself, Wendell says in the book world, this auction is something to be celebrated.
It's a cause for rejoicing. Not that we rejoice that Larry is selling off his books, but that this will bring, you know, new attention to the dispersal of collections of books at reasonable prices. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if out of this auction we don't get a number of collectors who will be able to buy very advantageously the basis for future collections for very little money, which will encourage them to go on collecting, because their initial investment will have been relatively small. So I think it's a win-win for everybody, and I'm excited that they're having the sale. It's going to get a lot of publicity, and I think it only brings more collectors into the market, eager to buy books at reasonable prices and then add to those collections.
Flash forward a month, and it's now August. It's still hot, and the drought conditions are still present. Archer City isn't much different than when I last visited, save for the flyers that seem to be in the window of every store. On each of them is the schedule for the last book sale. The presence of the flyers is a sign of how the relationship between the town and Larry McMurtry has changed over the years. Reports from 1997 still show up online, when the New York Times and the Houston Chronicle both told of McMurtry's dream of changing Archer City into a book town in the mold of Hay-on-Wye, the famous literary enclave in Wales. Those reports tell of how some residents would openly mock his plans, and of other difficulties that had occurred. A few years later, McMurtry came close to shutting down the entire store before changing his mind, a decision the community celebrated. Now, not only are there flyers in every store, but the antique stores keep McMurtry books stocked, and one of them even sells Archer City coffee mugs with Home of Larry McMurtry on the side. that dream of a book town never really caught on. Only one other bookstore ever opened, and it was run by a former Booked Up employee. Yet Archer City does see a number of international visitors each year. Are they all there to shop at Booked Up?
Most of them. Most of them.
Vicki Davis runs a local antique store and volunteers at the Archer City Visitors Center, a remodeled gas station on the northwest corner of the town square.
In Archer, we have two things that draw people probably, and that would be hunting and the bookstores. So the bookstores share at least half of that probably.
Where do people come from to go to the bookstores?
All over the world. Just this summer, Sweden. A lot from that part, it seems like. England. We had someone in here from Mexico the other day.
Many of those travelers spend their nights at the Lonesome Dove Inn, a local bed and breakfast that used to be the Archer County Hospital. Some touches of that prior purpose still remain despite extensive renovation. The stairway is still wide enough to accommodate stretchers, and the old operating room still has its tile floor. But it's become a much more home-like place to stay for the international guests that owner Mary Webb has hosted since opening in 1998.
I've had them from probably the farthest is Australia, Japan, Sweden, Norway, Hawaii, Mexico, Alaska, and all over the United States. England and France, yeah, Europe, yeah. I've had some from just about everywhere. It's just been such a really fun 15 years. The bibliophiles are probably the most dedicated people I've ever seen. I wouldn't have thought there would be so many and that they would travel this far.
The Lonesome Dove is usually busy during hunting season, and has also seen its share of celebrities, mainly ones who have worked with McMurtry, such as Cloris Leachman and Robert Duvall. The fireplace mantle is the home of both the Golden Globe and the Oscar McMurtry won for co-writing the screenplay for the film Brokeback Mountain. But even a stream of bibliophiles and hunters and stays from movie stars can't keep things going forever. In another sign of change for Archer City, Webb's Inn is for sale. Back in the town square, I stop in to visit Cheryl Biesinger, the director of the Archer Public Library. It's the library for all of Archer County, and through the efforts of many, including Larry McMurtry, Biesinger says it's grown from a small one-room building into a facility holding 60,000 volumes with a large children's area and a research room decorated with pieces of Texasville movie sets. With around 400 visitors per week, it's the piece of book culture that has taken hold for all of Archer City. A culture Biesinger doesn't think will change much after the auction.
I don't really think it's going to hurt any. I mean, it's not going to really make literary awareness any less, because we still will have the one bookstore. We still will have the library, which is prominently placed on the square. What I think the community really dislikes about losing the bookstore is that we will become like other West Texas towns with maybe some vacant storefronts, which we haven't really had since Larry's bought up all of the storefronts that have become available to put books into.
The concern over empty storefronts is one that has been shared by others, and Biesinger says revenue is the reason why.
That does give tax revenue to the community, and so that'll be lost revenue, which could mean streets that are even worse than they are now, not as nice of water facilities, just different things that most towns have that it's hard for small towns to give to their residents without a solid tax base.
But despite concerns like these, it surprises me that everyone I talk to says that overall, they don't expect things to be very different in Archer City, even with Booked Up about to become a fraction of itself. Mary Webb tells me why.
A lot of the people, though, I say book people, there are several different kinds. There's the dealers, and there's the collectors, and there's the people that are just fascinated with McMurtry and that love books. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of different reasons that come to the bookstores. And that's why I feel like, although he's closing down three of them, I don't really see that it's going to affect the people that come here, because I don't think they come because of the massive number of books so much as they come because this is Larry's home, and this is, he's still going to have 150,000 books in the store. And personally, I can't feel that it's going to make that big of an impression on the town or my business. I think people will still come. And I feel like since he's going to keep the one open and he's still going to have his home here, and nothing's going to change that. This is always going to be his home, and people who are here because they really do admire his work and appreciate him for what he's done. Just the fact that three of the buildings are closing is not going to make that big a difference.
Given some of the history between McMurtry and his hometown, that's a strong statement. But that tone has been apparent in my conversations around town. What once seemed to be an uneasy, almost unwanted alliance has found a comfort zone, and Booked Up has become part of the town identity. Again, Vicki Davis.
That is our reputation, probably, good or bad. It is our reputation.
But Larry McMurtry won't be around forever, and the question of what happens when he and his store are gone goes unanswered. I return a few days later. It's day one of the last book sale, and Archer City is busier than it has been in years. Throughout the day, I overhear locals exclaim that they can't remember the last time they saw this many people in town. Cheryl Biesinger tells me it's not even this busy when there's an important trial at the county courthouse. Larry McMurtry will tell the New York Times that he had never seen this many people lined up in Archer City, and probably wouldn't again. Bidders have been trickling in all week to browse the shelves and get an idea of what they want to buy. The night before the auction, a barbecue dinner and viewing of The Last Picture Show were held in the Royal Theater, and it's only become more crowded since then. There's a bit of a media circus, which has been building for months. The local media coverage seemed expected, but articles about the sale appeared in publications on both coasts, and even NPR's Morning Edition got in on the act. The actual event has brought media from across the country to Archer City, and in coming weeks, this little town will be exposed to the world once again by writers from The Atlantic, The New York Times, The New Republic, The Los Angeles Times, Time Magazine, and Reuters, among other outlets. In terms of exposure, it's certainly the biggest thing to hit town since Texasville was filmed. The bidders themselves come from even more places than the media. License plates from at least 11 different states dot the town square, some from as far away as California and Florida. Bidders from at least four other states arrive in rental cars. Many bring trailers or arrive in vans or moving trucks. Needless to say, parking spaces in the town square are scarce. The public library and the visitor center have been turned into auxiliary facilities for bidders. Drinks are available in the visitor center, and restrooms and internet connections are in the library. Inside Building 4, what had been an area with two large tables and an assortment of unshelved books has become the auction floor. The tables have become a stage, and a large lectern bearing the logo of Addison & Serova Auction House stands ready. Brown plastic folding chairs have been set out, and all of them are full. It's standing room only, and more than a few bidders have to take that option. Before the auction itself gets underway, McMurtry makes an appearance to welcome the bidders before retiring back to Building 1 with a horde of media following him. I settle in to observe the proceedings.
Lot number 8, same story here. How about $100? $100 to get it started, $100. $100 in the back, now $125. $125, now $150. $125, now $150. $150 in the back, now $175. $150 is bid, now $175 to advance.
And that's when reality slaps me. Despite the hoopla, this is still just an auction, and the main event won't be terribly exciting. But when the McMurtry 100 come on the block, things get interesting. The handpicked list of unique books, not necessarily rare or valuable, but unique, is the only reason some bidders are here, and it creates the most dramatic moments of the entire auction.
$150, now $175, $175, now $200. Sold, $175, buyer number 48.
Pat Gerard is from Frisco, Texas. He's here as a buyer for a private collector, and his number has been called often during day one.
You've been busy today.
Yeah, sure. It's been fun.
So what all have you bought?
Oh, a little bit of American history, politics, world history, some oil and gas. You name it, scientific reports, maps, just all over. It's been great. We've had a great time.
Gerard snagged one of the more well-known pieces in the McMurtry 100, a first edition of The Bounty Hunters, the first book by celebrated writer Elmore Leonard.
Well, that was, you know, we were thinking everybody's going to go ahead and run the prices on up, and we held off, but then nobody raised their hand, and we couldn't pass it up, so... you know, that was a find of the day for us. I mean, even though the erotica would have been, that would have been a unique collection.
Tom Congleton owns Between the Covers Rare Books in Gloucester City, New Jersey, not far from Philadelphia. He bought what many considered the prize of the McMurtry 100, a book of erotica filled with unpublished stories.
Apparently it was a Texas oil man who solicited authors in their spare time to write erotica for him for pay, and apparently authors such as Anais Nin and Henry Miller and Lawrence Durrell all got into the action and would write him dirty stories and send them off to him, and I'm pretty sure they're unpublished, and I think it's a pretty remarkable group of things. I've known of it in the past. I even have a vague memory. I might have owned it one time many, many years ago, but it's quite a unique thing. I was very happy with it.
After the McMurtry 100 are sold, it's time for lunch, which causes even more of a traffic jam than everyone's cars did. The Dairy Queen is prepared. Earlier in the week, small placards were made for patrons to take a number. The Wildcat Cafe, the small local diner that happens to be across the street from Building 4, isn't quite as ready. The line is out the door within minutes, prompting one resident to ask, where are the locals supposed to eat? Today, it's a good question. I want to ask a waitress if there's ever been a crowd like this, but they're all moving so frantically that the answer is obvious. It's so crowded that small groups are asked to share tables to allow more people into the building. So I end up spending my lunch break with bidders from New Mexico, chatting about the auction, travel, and the surrounding area.
At 9:30, just like we did today, except it's going to be in building number 2. And building number 2 is a great building. It's got lots of books, and I know a lot of people spend a lot of time there because the quality is really good there.
The rest of Friday's activity and most of Saturday's moves quickly, with most lots being sold without many bidding wars. Not everything sells, though. Fiction books are largely ignored by the bidders, and many remain unsold at the end of the auction. But with the rest of the books, small and large bookstores alike take advantage of the opportunity to add what all agree is quality stock for cheap prices. Auctioneer Michael Addison, who's also in the bookselling trade, says dealers did the bulk of business over the 2 days.
Easily 99% of the lots went to dealers. As I figured would happen, and just about in any auction like this, or in most auctions where there are a lot of dealers, you end up with a core group of buyers of about 6 or 7. We had something over 160, 170 bidders, but I sold most of the lots to a group of about 6 or 7 different bidders. So there were a few here and there that were probably collectors, but I would have never really known who they were. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm sure if I listen back over my tape, I can pick out the numbers for the 6 or 7.
So. Oh, you could.
One of those bidding dealers is Powell's Books, an institution in Portland, Oregon, and one of, if not the, largest independent bookseller in the world. Paul Skop and John Getcho are part of the store's used books department.
How many lots do you guys get met with?
I think right around 68.
So almost 10,000 books?
Right around 10,000 books, good guess. We bought some general stock, and then we were bidding on some of the literature and poetry and art books and photography books down there at the other store.
For a store like Powell's that carries so much general stock, what was unique about the books here that you thought would complement the stock that's already there at Powell's?
A good question, and one kind of hard to answer there, I would say. Hey, what do you think, John?
We didn't know what we were coming to, is part of it. And we knew that there are not very many occasions like this. And what it turned out to be is mixed in with a lot of things we see frequently. There are things I've never seen.
That's what we think. Like, it's really kind of different books.
Yeah, you know? That's pretty exciting.
Tom Congleton kept raising his placard throughout both days and ended up with a lot of new stock from a type of event he doesn't normally attend.
We don't buy that much at auction. This was just a good opportunity to buy a great deal of inventory in one place.
What made this inventory stand out from other auctions that come up?
Well, it's carefully picked out. It's well curated. It's in the middle of nowhere, so we were hoping we wouldn't have too much competition, although we had some. But and it's pretty remarkable what he's done here, filling this sort of deserted town filled with rare books and good used books.
So how many lots did you end up getting?
I'm not sure. I think we got about between 110 and 120 lots, which I think is probably about 17,000 books.
Were there certain books you were looking out for in these lots to pick up?
Oh, yeah, and some of the lots, which might be anywhere from 150 to 250 books. Sometimes I bought the lot just to get a single book or two or three books in the whole lot. Happily, we have an inventory that includes both used books and rare books, so we have something we can do with both the dross and the cream. You know.
Now, how are you going to get all those back to New Jersey?
That's a good question. If you've got the answer for me, I'd like to know it. I suspect what I'm going to do, I do have a fair sized staff. I think we're going to send people back here in the next week or two, box it up, and probably try to find a freight company to bring them back.
When all is said and done, I have to ask Michael Addison the obvious. Is this the biggest auction he's conducted?
Oh, yes. Yes. This is probably bigger than just about most auctioneers have done. So, yeah.
Well, other than the scale of the auction, what's made this different than other book auctions you've done?
The nature of it is that it's an event. And most auctions are auctions. We wanted this to be more an event and a celebration of what Mr. McMurtry had done and a celebration of the book-selling trade. That's why we had the theme of the last book sale. And had the barbecue and the movie screening as well, just to make it a fun event for booksellers. We wanted it to be a shelf sale unlike any other, and I think we achieved that.
Addison's team and Booked Up were certainly successful. But now that the auction is over, the hard part begins for the bidders, finding a way to get their purchases home. Some know they will have to make multiple trips to move their new stock, but some try to do so in one fell swoop, including a bidder from Colorado that fills his minivan with his purchases. He's bought so much that his vehicle barely clears the ground as he drives away, taking with him pieces of a store the likes of which are rarely seen. Tom Congleton explains.
There are very few places in the United States that have this many books in one place. My particular book business probably has a similar amount of books, but beyond that, I don't think there's more than a handful. I mean, there's a place in Maryland that has more, maybe a million books, and there's a few other places, but in Powell's, I imagine, but very, very few places are like this, and I think in the future you're going to see very few that are like this. This is a pretty remarkable thing, and I don't think you're going to see its like again anytime soon.
John Getcho put the weekend in a bookseller's perspective.
This was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and Texas is lucky. It is lucky to still have what they do down here. So I hope people come and visit still. This isn't over.
As for the locals, most stay away from the auction. A few will be quoted here and there in articles, but most simply keep their distance, and their thoughts on what happened this weekend go unrecorded. But it's not the first time Archer City has taken a back seat to Larry McMurtry in the eyes of visitors, and it surely won't be the last, something illustrated by the speed at which most bidders depart. The crowds and cars disappear within hours, and soon, as if some magical character like Mary Poppins or the Cat in the Hat escaped from a children's book and went to work cleaning, Archer City is back to normal, with only the still-hanging schedule flyers and the newly emptied bookshelves showing that the bidders were ever here. Flash forward another month, and I'm once again back in Archer City. Temperatures have dropped somewhat, and some much-needed rain has come through, though not enough to lift all the drought restrictions. School is back in session now, and black and gold flags that read Archer City Wildcats dot the town, a reminder that this is indeed Wildcat Country. I'm back to find out just what kind of effect the last book sale had and is having on the town, and City Secretary Kim Witsit is my contact to get the answers.
It was a good week. They had the pre-registration and the look-through for about a week prior to the auction starting. By Thursday of that week, there were a lot of people in town, and Friday was huge. The community kind of banded together in the restaurants, and were small, and some open in the evening and some open for breakfast and lunch, and everybody just kind of got on the same bandwagon, and we're gonna have all these people in town, we need to take care of them. I think economically it was a good week for Archer City. It'll be a little while before we see that in our sales tax revenues.
In light of this financial impact, I ask how important it was that Larry McMurtry chose to downsize Booked Up rather than close it outright.
Very, because we don't want to lose our title as a book town. I don't know of any other small town in our area that can claim that.
But as before, the question of what will happen when Booked Up, and in the same vein, McMurtry himself is gone, seems to be one that Archer City isn't ready to consider.
I really can't answer that. That's not really something that I've thought about or that we've discussed. I mean, we've just clung to the fact that we were still going to have booked up.
I tried to reach McMurtry for a follow-up interview, but he's gone to his home in Arizona, and all I managed to get is a brief phone conversation. I ask if things are any different around booked up now that it's downsized, and his answer is not really, noting that the only change seems to be that he and his staff are only monitoring one building instead of four. A few weeks later, I take one last trip to Archer City, just to see what's going on around town in the aftermath of the auction. Folks tell me that things aren't very different, but there have been a few changes. The leftover stock from the auction has found its way into Building 2 at Booked Up, so the staff is again watching more than one building. The store's reputation hasn't flagged, though. Someone from Denmark recently visited to browse the shelves. Mary Webb found a buyer to turn the Lonesome Dove Inn into a home, and it turned out to be an Archer City native coming back to retire. It's a story that doesn't sound all that different from Larry McMurtry's. As I drive through town, I find I am hungry. So once again, I pull into the parking lot of the Dairy Queen. I sit down at a green booth this time, and again enjoy a basket of chicken fingers. And again I walk past the faded outdoor tables as I leave. There's not much traffic as I leave town, except at the intersection of Highway 79 and Highway 25, which is the only place there's ever much traffic. Those black flags still wave in support of the Wildcats, even as the high school football team is in the midst of a one-win season. In light of that, it seems apropos that some of the flags are showing noticeable wear. It's quiet around town, as with few exceptions, it always seems to be. Will the last book sale have a lasting effect on Archer City? So far, the answer is no, just as many expected. But it may be too soon to tell for sure. If nothing else, it's at least a warning that the day is nearing when Booked Up will be gone, which means that the town has a chance to prepare for it. But that seems to be a concern for another day. For now, things are as they usually are, and it's just another day in Archer City. To view a photo gallery of some of the sites described in this story, or to listen again at any time, visit our website, kccu.org. For KCCU News, I'm Clinton Whedon.